Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and this is Carl from Deviant Legion, and we are very, very happy to welcome back one of our former DJs and hosts and just an all-around good guy, Steve Limes Marshall, who, if you want to check out our archive page, we always had Horror with a Twist of Limes. And it's nice to have you back, my friend. Seriously.
It's lovely. Lovely to be back, mate. I love you, brother.
I know. We don't keep in touch as much as we should, but damn, it's nice to have you back. Seriously.
Awesome.
So you actually contacted me on this and said, why don't we do a show about Emmett Walsh, who's a great character actor, just passed away last week, 3 days short of his 89th birthday. And I wanted to first ask you a little bit about your thoughts about Michael Emmett Walsh and also where you first encountered him as an actor.
You know, I have a strange answer to that, if I may, Carl.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'd like to explain. I don't know. I don't know where I first saw him. It's almost like that. You're a Babylon 5 fan, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right. Remember that thing the Vorlons used to say, you've always been here?
Yes.
He's one of those actors that he's just always been there. And why is it that it takes these people, you know, passing before we actually start to look back and think, oh, my God, yeah, I also loved them there. I loved them there. Oh, my goodness, they did that. And do you know where I'm coming from?
I know exactly. You know, this is the thing about Emmett Walsh. He's ubiquitous. You take a look, and he's just everywhere. I mean, the man had nearly 300 credits. And that's TV and film. And we're not even talking about his talk show appearances and his Broadway and so on and so forth. This man was all over the place. Seriously.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, honestly, Carl, if I am to really kind of break it down and go back into my past, I think the first time I encountered him was in Blade Runner, in an old VHS, you know, back in the day, the old pirate tape, grainy, you know, kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And it took a while for Blade Runner to resonate with me, but as you know now, to me, that's like the holy grail of movies. But I think the first time I actually really noticed him, and I'm going to say a line, and I'm going to see if you register the movie. Die, gas pumper! Do you remember?
No, I don't register it. I don't register it. Just tell me.
The jerk with Steve Martin. And he was a crazy sniper. That literally picked Steve Martin's name out of a phone book. And you want to talk about a scene-stealing performance? He's fucking hilarious. Hilarious. Have you seen that film?
Actually, I basically refuse to see that film. There are reasons for that. Just personal.
Okay. If you can get past those reasons ever, it's worth it. I will say that.
Oh, listen. Do you remember what Ebert said? Okay, so Ebert said that any movie with Harry Dean Stanton or Emmett Walsh, you know, it's worth the price of admission just for them. Period.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yep. I would agree with that. I would say that's a solid statement. You know, I'm going to flip the question on you, my friend. Where did you first encounter him?
Now the interesting thing I want to just back up a little bit.
Sure.
So his first role was in Midnight Cowboy. He was uncredited. He had a lot of small roles, and films like Slapshot and Nickelodeon. He played Father Logan in there. And I've seen all these films. And Bound for Glory, he had a small role. The Gambler, he was a gambler in that. But it wasn't until a lesser-known film of Dustin Hoffman's called Straight Time, where he played the sleazy parole officer, Earl Frank.
Okay.
And it just an amazing, amazing role. Let me get to something here. Who was it? I think it was Pauline Kael mentioned of this. Let's see. He had a small, okay, now I can't find the quote right now, but she said, you know, he just brought the film, this real sleazy, you know, gritty atmosphere that it needed. And
yeah.
He was just, he's phenomenal. And there are just, as I go through his filmography, I'll mention a number of films he was in. That's the first time that I really noticed him. And ever since then, you see him everywhere. He was all over the place. So, you know, getting back to you, you know, you talked about Blade Runner, and I think we need to talk about Blade Runner in terms of his role in it. And he played Captain Bryant.
Yeah, Bryant.
In that. And of course, you know, the line to Decker, you know, I need my old Blade Runner back. You know,
need your magic.
I need your magic. And you know,
yeah.
The thing is, it seemed like almost every role, at least in many of the films that I saw, particularly in the 70s and 80s, he had this really like oily quality, even when he was playing a good guy. Would you agree with that?
I would absolutely agree with that. And you actually made me think something else, and that is going back to Blade Runner for a second.
Okay.
He's one of those guys that could turn on a dime. He could, you know, like when he first, you know, when he's like in that scene in Blade Runner, when he's got Deckard in the office, and like you said, you know, he's pouring him a drink, and, you know, we got this problem, blah, blah, blah. You know, and then, you know, Deckard's like, you know, I was quit when I came in here, twice as quit,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then he just flips, and you see that dark side of him. You know, that stop where you are. You know the score, pal. If you're not cop, you're little people. And
yeah.
It unnerves Harrison Ford, right? That speaks to me to what you're saying about I think that oily quality a little bit. Like, you know, that
mm-hmm.
ability to flip like that?
Oh, yeah. That's, you know, I mentioned Straight Time before. If you've not seen Straight Time, you need to see that for his performance in that because he really flips many times in that film. You know, it's amazing.
Sorry, what? That was
Go ahead.
Straight Time, did you say that was?
Straight Time, 1978.
I've never seen that. I've got to put that one on my list, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got to put that on my list. Let's talk about Blood Simple.
Okay.
Are you a Coen Brothers fan?
Oh, absolutely.
You're going to hate me because you know what? I'm not. You know what? I can go either way with those guys. I either love them or I hate them. And I love Blood Simple. And that is I mean, it was their first movie, right? That was the movie that put them on the map. And part of the reason, the big part of the reason I love that is because of him, because of Walsh.
Yep.
And his character in that, you know?
He's absolutely
I think he laughs at the end of it.
I can't remember the line specifically, but at the end when he's about ready to die, he says, you know, I know I'm going to hell, and I'll save you a place down there. something like that. And
yeah.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. It's almost a precursor to, and I've often wondered this, even though that they're very different films, I've often wondered if Angel Heart drew on that a little bit, because even the final line is very similar. If you remember Angel Heart, like what you said there, he's like,
yeah.
I know I'm going to hell. And, you know, and he's this sleazy private detective. And then in Angel Heart, we've got Mickey Rourke, same thing, sleazy private detective. And mm-hmm. what's Mickey Rourke's last line in that? You know, you're going to burn for this. Yeah, I know, in hell. I often wondered if there was a degree of inspiration from M. Emmett Walker's.
I don't think it might be inspiration. I think it's also in terms of just the movies of that age had this you know, in the 70s into the early 80s, they were depressing films, and they were, you know, about, you know, sad sacks and things like that. Both those are noirs. So, you know,
yes.
it's the old adage of the bastard, the guy who sort of walks into the situation and he just gets fucked every way he can, right? And so I think that's part of it too. I don't think there's a direct line there, but certainly philosophically there is.
Yeah, I think so. Interesting factoid, which you probably
mm-hmm.
know.
I
again, this comes back to what we were talking about at the beginning, is why is it that it's after people pass that we really look back at them and learn these little pieces. He couldn't hear out of his left ear. I didn't know that till today. I was today years old when I learned that.
Yeah. He couldn't hear out of his left ear. Yeah.
And that puts some of his acting style into perspective, because they're all almost I used to think there would be times where it almost looked like he couldn't. Like when he was acting, it's like he couldn't catch quite something what someone said. And now I'm thinking that possibly was the case, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Being partially deaf in one ear with an accent hearkening from Vermont made it clear to Walsh, I wasn't going to do Shaw and Shakespeare and Molière. My speech was simply too bad. His persona was a mesmerizing everyman and an indelible gargoyle who featured indelible poached egg eyes. Beautiful description.
That's
beautiful.
Poetic. That's poetic.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it kind of – I'm going to ask you a question. What is it that we find – what do you think it is, Carl, that we find so – fascinating about, you know, we have our leading man actors, you know, you have your George Clooney's and your Brad Pitt's and all these people that get all these roles. And then you mentioned Harry Dean Stanton and again, M. Emmett Walsh, these people that they're not that romantic lead. They're not that, but they carve out this incredible career as a character actor and are that much more interesting than some of the leading actors that are, you know, working or have worked. How do you feel about character actors and M. Emmett Walsh as a character actor in particular?
I am much more prone to like character actors than I like, quote, star actors. I mean, you know, there's so many of them. And I think part of the reason is that they inhabit so many different characters in so many different films. They don't get... Even if they get typecast, they shine because they do what they do well. You know, I mean, we talk about M. Emmett Walsh as sort of this sleazy guy. I want to flip the switch here a little bit. And one of his nicest roles in one of my favorite comedies in the 80s. That's Rodney Dangerfield in Back to School.
Oh, my goodness. That's a good one, man. That's a good one. Yeah. But I got to be honest, a lot of years since I've seen it.
Mm-hmm. But
he
plays the diving coach, M. Emmett Walsh, in that movie. And he finds out that Rodney Dangerfield did this triple Lindy. And of course, it all works out where he has to do the thing at the end. And he's just such a nice character. And you love him. You know, he could play anything. There are so many roles. I could go through and just list the movies that I like, and I'd give you 50 of them. Seriously.
Yeah. And then you've got something else. Again, I didn't realize until today. He was the voice of Earl Stutz in The Iron Giant.
Yeah.
And I love that film. I love that film.
Oh. No, you're not the only one. I love that film too.
As far as I got to be honest, I'm kind of 50-50 on animated movies, which pisses my kids off a little bit. But that movie I love, and yeah, again, today years old when I realized that was his voice in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just to give you an idea, and I'm not talking about the little tiny roles that he had. But if we start talking about films where he had a major role, you know, just listen to some of these films. Okay. Serpico, The Gambler.
Right.
The Prisoner of Second Avenue, Mikey and Nikki, Slapshot, Airport 77, Straight Time, The Jerk, Brubaker, Ordinary People, Rinse, Blade Runner, Fast Walking, Missing in Action. He was in a Chuck Norris film with a goddamn Uzi right alongside Chuck Norris. I want you to think about that for a second.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy. Actually, I got to take that back. I said two of them because I read Grandview USA, but I misread that, and that's me thinking of that. What was the other Chuck Norris one? Invasion USA. I think it was.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, Missing in Action, absolutely. Yeah, right? That's crazy.
Fletch. Okay, Fletch. Critters. He was in Critters, for God's sake. Okay,
Harry
Raising Arizona, which we got to talk about Raising Arizona. Scene of him in the machine shop.
Okay.
It's fucking comedy gold.
But you know what? It's funny that I know you said you didn't watch it or you won't watch it, but that's, again, why it was so memorable to me in The Jerk, because he did have a really good comic side to him. And, go for it. What is it about tell me about Raising Arizona. What is it that resonates with you
it's
about
just
that
this one
particular
scene? Where Nicolas Cage goes into this machine shop and he just keeps talking. And talking about, you know, his wife and so on and so forth and just normal shit. And Nicolas Cage gets more and more flustered because he needs something. And it's just this wonderful little scene, and it's maybe about 3 minutes long, and it's fucking hysterical.
Wow. I got to rewatch that. That's been a lot of years, man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going down the list now, and I actually just spotted one. I got to ask, and I don't remember him in this. And it's funny because I do remember this film, and it probably for the wrong reasons. Raise the Titanic. He was in Raise the Titanic. Do you remember? Do you remember his role in that?
No. I saw it, and it's been so long that I've forgotten about it.
Probably a good thing.
You know, that tells you about basically the movie itself, okay? But I was in that. Another one I do have to mention, which I love this film, The Mighty Quinn, and it's Robert Townsend, and it's Denzel Washington, and it's set on a tropical island. and Denzel as the police chief. And M. Emmett Walsh plays a sleazy CIA agent. Again, he does sleaze really fucking well.
Yeah.
He just does. And he's
actually,
wonderful.
You know what?
I
remember that one. That was a good one. Sundown, The Vampire in Retreat. I'm a horror fan, and I never saw that.
Oh, I did a commentary watch on that.
You fill me in. What's that one?
It doesn't
resonate.
David Carradine, and there's this Western town that are all vampires, and Emmett Walsh is one of them. And all they want
he's
to do is survive. Yeah, he's a vampire.
Oh my God, I got to see this. How did I miss this?
I will tell you, it's cheesy as fuck, but it's wonderfully cheesy. It's oh my God, what am I watching? Oh, I have to see more. You know, right?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. A Time to Kill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was
Romeo
Time to Kill
Juliet.
Too.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, say what did you say about Time to Kill there, Carl?
Oh yeah, he was in that. That's what I said.
Wow.
Here's another one you gotta talk about, okay? And it's not a well known one. It's called The Music of Chance. And
there's an
actual author I like, but his name is Paul Auster. And this is based on one of his books. And basically, he is one of two people. The other one what's his name? Gray. So Spader and Mindy Patinkin are these drifters, and they walk into this situation with Joel Gray and M. Emmett Walsh and Charles Durning, where they lose a poker game, and they have to pay back by doing stuff for them. And it's a really odd little film, but God, it's a great film. And if you haven't seen it, you need to see it.
Yeah, what,
good film.
I, you know what? I got to make a note of that one as well. What was the title of that again, Carl?
The Music of Chance.
The Music of Champs?
Chance. Yeah. C-H-A-N-C-E.
Chance. Gotcha. Oh, I'm sorry, man. I missed that. I do. The Music of Chance. Okay.
Right.
Yeah. All right. I got to make a note of that. I'm going to see that one as well. That sounds like right up my alley. Another M. Emmett Walsh factoid that was today years old when I learned. He used to give $2 bills to people on the movie sets that he worked on and would say to them, don't spend it and you'll never be broke.
I love it. Now, I have to mention this particular movie. I don't like this film. Okay,
uh-oh.
And M. Emmett Walsh is in, but our friend, film director Joe Black, who I'm doing a commentary series on the films of Elliot Gould in the 70s, but he said, if I don't mention chairman of the board, he's going to kick me in the ass. Okay, and...
Is that the Carrot Top movie?
Yes. It's a fucking Carrot Top movie. And he says that M. Emmett Walsh is fucking hysterical in it. You know. Seriously. And you know who else is in that movie? Get this. This is a Carrot Top movie. Guess who's in this movie?
Go on.
Larry Miller, Raquel fucking Welch, Jack Warden,
my God.
Bill Irwin, M. Emmett Walsh, Taylor DeGrom, Jack Riley, Rance Howard, Little Richard. Who's even Little Richard?
But it's funny because we know they're doing it for a play. We know they're just doing it for, I mean, my God, that movie, if ever you're doing a movie for a paycheck, that's it. But it's Michael Caine syndrome, right? You know
yeah.
what?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I've never seen John Ford,
right? Like,
but I sure do like the house it's bought.
Yeah, that was what he said about, that was what he said about Jaws, right? Jaws the Revenge. Yeah,
yeah, John Ford. John Ford.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. Yeah, sounding like doing a Carrot Top movie. Oh, my God. I just find it strange that we all just instantly know that movie when the title comes up. That kills
yeah.
me. And something scary that I actually just read, getting back to M. Emmett Walsh for a second there, and I almost dropped a brick, and that was, says he was in Twilight, but then I just saw the year, 1998, and it's like, no, it's got to be, it's a different Twilight. It's not
thank
a sparkly
God
vampire.
For that.
Yeah.
No sparkly vampire for M. Emmett Walsh. No. Not with those eyeballs. I'm sorry, no.
No, you're telling me he's the Western in the Desert vampire, not the sparkly vampire.
Exactly. So, it's not set in stone yet, but I'm planning a commentary watch on Friday. And, of course, this being Easter week, a very appropriate film to do is a film called Calvary. And M. Emmett Walsh is actually in that movie, not for long, but he has a small cameo in it. So I'm hoping that all comes together, that we can do that on Friday with Adam Prince, so we can also, you know, take a nod and show you a film where you didn't know he was there, but he's there. So there's that.
Well, for me, it's just another excuse to rewatch Blade Runner for the 7,000th time.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
For God's sake, of course.
I don't need many reasons to rewatch that film, but this gives me another. Which actually, can I do another fun factoid?
Do all the fucking factoids you can, man. Go for it.
Okay. apparently, I thought I knew everything about Blade Runner there was to know. It's just how you get sucked into Harrison Ford and you get sucked into Edward James Olmos and Rutger Hauer. M. Emmett Walsh apparently had no idea where it was going when he did it and frankly didn't really have much of an idea of what was going on with the plot. But, my God, he nails it. I can't imagine anyone else in that role. And then to read that the guy didn't really have a clue where the story was going as they were doing it. Like, it's crazy. Today, mm-hmm. years old, I learned that about my favorite film.
It's nice. That's
crazy.
Nice. You know, sometimes you gotta trust the filmmakers in that they know what they're doing. Even if you don't understand what's going on. So, you know,
yeah.
that's the way it is. Now, one other film I want to mention that I love M. Emmett Walsh in, and another not well-known and not well-regarded film. Have you ever heard of The Odd Life of Timothy Green?
The Odd Life of Timothy Green? No. No, I haven't.
So
was that theatrical?
It's really a children's film. It's a children's film, and guess who it's written by? Ahmet Zappa, Frank Zappa's son.
What? Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm not. Oh, I'm dead fucking serious.
That's
it's about this childless couple who can't conceive, and they make a wish, and they bury it in the garden, and suddenly there's this boy that shows up. And has plants on his feet. And it's about
wow.
how this little miracle changes everybody. And and Emmett Walsh plays Uncle Bub, who's the uncle to this couple. And just a wonderful little role that he has. And it's actually a really sweet-natured film. And a lot of people said it was cloying and so on and so forth. I don't fucking care. I loved it. But that's another one you should check out.
Yeah.
The Odd Life of Timothy. That comes, I think, that was made in like 2012.
Okay. And, you know, we've really kind of dived into the movies, but the man had a really prolific TV career as well, right?
Oh, we're getting there. Trust me, we're getting there. I figured we do most of the movies, and we certainly are going to mention some of the great things that he was in. So go ahead. You start on his TV stuff.
So going to TV, obviously, the one that jumps out at me first is X-Files, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Seeing him in X-Files. And I remember him also as Barry Allen's dad in the pilot episode of, remember The Flash? The first Flash that they did back in, he was Barry Allen's dad in that. And that sticks out in my mind as well. What about you, Carl?
Well, I think the first thing that I ever saw him on TV was one of those, like, it was almost like an after-school movie. And it's a portrait of a teenage, Sarah T. portrait of a teenage alcoholic. And it's one of those, you know, don't do this type of movies. But he plays one of the teachers in the school.
Okay.
And I do remember him there. And there's certain films that he did. I do remember him in High Noon Part 2. He plays a bad guy in that.
Okay.
And I mean, he was just all over the place. I mean, I'm taking a look at this. And you know, Home Improvement and The Outer Limits, and I don't really remember which episode of the 90s Outer Limits he was on. Of course, you know, Arthur Dale's his X-Files. But his most recent thing that he did was in like two or three episodes of The Righteous Gemstones. And he played Granddaddy Roy Gemstone.
Okay.
And he was wonderful in those. He also did a bunch of voiceovers, too. Let's not forget for those kids that grew up in the 2010s, he was on Pound Puppies.
Oh, my God. My kids watched that. Oh, and The Wild Thornberries. My kids really loved that one.
Yeah.
Big Guy and Rusty the Boy Robot. Voiced 26 episodes. I never heard of this, Carl. Does that one strike anything with you?
No, that one doesn't do anything for me either. I don't know that one.
But the one thing that's obviously, you know me. You know I love my sci-fi and I love my horror. It's amazing to me now, looking down this, the amount of genre episodes he was in. Like The Hitchhiker.
Okay.
I loved that. The Twilight Zone, the first...
That's the 80s Twilight Zone.
Right. They've rebooted it like about three times, I think, right? And that was the 80s. I liked the 80s version of the Twilight Zone.
I think it's the best of the reboots by far.
Yeah. Well, the other ones never really... I don't think they really took off. They did one with Jordan Peele a little while ago, I think, and that didn't really go anywhere. But there's another one. Oh, my goodness. Tales from the Crypt and Amazing Stories.
Actually, that Tales from the Crypt, he has, I know that one. So the first episode was directed by Walter Hill, and it's about the executioner.
Okay.
And M. Emmett Walsh is on that particular episode. That's a great fucking episode. And guess who does the music for that episode?
Go on.
Ry Cooter.
Okay. Sidebar. You did it. You mentioned Ry Cooter. The soundtrack to Southern Comfort, dude. Wow.
Oh, fucking A.
Fucking them. I fall asleep to that so often. Like, I just love that. But
I'm a huge Ry Cooter fan. Huge Ry Cooter fan.
Huge.
To me, it's
amazing.
Always Paris, it's Paris, Texas for me, but yeah.
God.
Yeah.
But getting back on point, here's one. And I love this show. Do you remember the show from the mid-90s? And there was a few really cool high-concept shows that came out around that time, and this was one of them, Early Edition. Do you remember that show?
I remember it. It was like a newspaper would be delivered, and it was actually from the future.
Exactly.
Like something like that?
Right. And M. Emmett Walsh played Santa Claus on the Christmas episode of Early Edition. And do you know what? I must have missed that one. And I loved that show. I really loved that show. I gotta hunt that down. Did you know if that's streaming anywhere?
Not offhand. I can check real quick if you give me a second.
Yeah, do it. Check it out. Because I would love to see his take on Santa Claus. That would be really cool. Because now that I'm thinking of it, I can totally see him in that role.
Hold on, I can answer that very, very shortly. Just a second.
Okay. No worries. I'm just going through some more here. I'm just looking through. Unsub, I remember that one. Oh, Night Visions. That was another. Yeah, that was another really short-lived horror anthology from the early noughties, I think we call them now, the early 2000s. We call them the noughties, right? Yeah, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
not available, unfortunately. Though I have my ways, I'll try to find it for you. Okay?
Yeah, if you can, I'll give you a $2 bill and tell you not to spend it.
Okay, fair enough. I appreciate that.
Oh, man. We're coming up on the 40-minute mark, Carl. What do you think? Let's come to the present, and how did you know, we hear it so often now, like, you know what I mean, we were knocked sideways with Apollo Creed, Carl Weathers passing recently,
yeah.
And we're like, oh my God, that, right? What was your first thought or feeling when you read the news that Emmett Walsh had passed?
Well, it was two things that came by, you know, with 3 days of his, 3 days before his 89th birthday. And I knew he was old, and I knew, you know, but my thing, when I heard he passed, it was like, okay, he's had a good life, but thank God for the work he gave us. Because he left a legacy that is basically unmatched. You know, there are a lot of people maybe in the same league, but that man just gave us so many great roles. And there's so many great roles to discover with him. He's got over 300 freaking credits. You haven't seen everything, trust me.
No. No. And it's, you know, it's funny, I actually, one of my novels I was writing on this concept of the immortality of actors. Because whenever you know and I know, whenever we put on Blade Runner, he's alive. When we put on Blood Simple, he's still that crazy laugh, but he's, you know, tracking down his prey. And it is the only true immortality, I think, for anyone is being in the pictures or TV shows like that. It's it chokes me up, but I don't know, man.
I hope you
have a bit of a spell without losing anyone else for a bit.
I'm afraid that's not going to happen. It's just the way it is. You know, I'm bracing myself for some major people that are going to pass away sooner or later. You know, people in music and that. But as I said, M. Emmett Walsh, he had a great run. And he also overcame, you know, physical disabilities. He did what he could do on his own level, and he did it extremely well. And every time I see him in a film, I smile because just that good.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's like an old friend.
He is an old friend. Did you want to know something?
But an old friend nonetheless.
But you want to know something? And this is honestly, I think, it's my last factoid. And I think it's almost my last word on what I can say to this.
Mm-hmm.
But I actually read today from a guy that worked in a gas station that used to see him around town. He said he would see him about every, like, you know, a couple of times a week that he would pop in. And he said he was just the nicest, most down-to-earth guy you could possibly meet. And I just love when I hear that. You know, they say never meet your heroes. Personally, I've met several of mine, and I've yet to be disappointed. This is one, obviously, neither of us will ever get to meet now. But to read that and to read someone just like us saying something like that, that's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
God bless you, my son.
Absolutely. And that's a really good way to end this show as far as our memoriam to M. Emmett Walsh. So, Limes, it's been a while. Tell me what's going on, buddy. How's the ice creams? What are you doing with yourself?
You know what? I'm still chugging along. I had a couple of really good interviews recently. I think you may have seen. I had Jane Badler on the show, who was Diana on the show V. And,
oh, nice.
Oh, Carl, she was a sweetheart. She was such a wonderful, wonderful guest. And if you haven't had a chance to catch that interview, I ask you to check it out. And another one I had was... again, another wonderful guest was, do you remember a short-lived but beloved show from the 90s, Space Above and Beyond?
Yes, absolutely.
A fantastic show, right? And I still to this day, I say that paved the way for the reboot of Battlestar Galactica, that same kind of militaristic sci-fi. I had Kristen Cloak on the show, who was one of the stars of Space Above and Beyond, and again, a wonderful. And she was in Millennium with Lance Henriksen, if you remember that show, too. Yeah.
I remember that show. I loved that show.
Oh, I did. I loved it. And she actually, funny enough, Kristen Cloak, she actually gave one of my top five TV moments ever, and that was when she just, her character learns the secrets of the Millennium Group, and she just falls apart mentally. And it's one of the craziest and best shot scenes. And it was wonderful to get a chance to talk to her about that. So I got more interviews lined up. I'm chugging away. That's what I'm up to, Carl. What about yourself? What's new with you?
Well, you know, I've been doing a little bit of getting used to Memphis. We moved down here in late December. And still getting sort of my feet on the ground. We've been doing some things as far as the Deviant Legion. One of the major things we're doing is, I mentioned it briefly, Joe Black and I are doing a monthly commentary watch of L.A. Gould films of the 1970s. He is actually quite good friends with Elliot. And so we're both, like, enamored of him. So we're doing that. We're doing a lot of films like I Will for Now and Whiffs and films that have basically fallen through the cracks. We're also I'm also back doing some work with my former partner. In fact, we're going to be doing a Coffin Joe film tomorrow on KSDAD. And on Friday, as I said, hopefully that'll work out that we're going to do the commentary watch of Calvary. On Sunday, which is Easter Sunday, I may do this on Saturday. We still are continuing our shows, our music shows, Rock the Town Radio. Unfortunately, I don't know if you know this line, but the person who was doing that, a very close friend of mine from high school, passed away. And so I've taken over. Yeah, he passed away and very suddenly, actually. We're still doing those, and it'd probably be Saturday I'll do it. We're doing basically sacred music done by rock bands. So we're going to be doing the Electric Prunes. They have a Mass in F minor. We're also doing Joe Jackson. He has a cantata on the Seven Deadly Sins called Heaven and Hell. And a couple other things that we'll be doing on that show, and we continue those shows generally on Sunday. But with it being Easter Sunday, I'm probably going to do it this Saturday instead. So that's what we have so far. Also, we have a gentleman by the name of Doug Blanchard and Kit Kittredge. And Doug is an artist, and he just republished, or no, he published a new set of paintings. Which depict the seven stations of the cross from a gay perspective. And we're going to have him on right after Easter. I think that's going to be Tuesday or Wednesday. We're still trying to set that up too. So there you go. Just trying to keep things going here at Deviant Legion and still, you know, integrating myself into a family of five with five dogs, mind you. So it's rather interesting to say the least, but it's a great time, and I'm very happy to be down here in Memphis.
That's amazing. Well, you know, since you took it to a personal place, and you know I love you, man. You know how much I love you, and I've always been. Yeah. One thing I love about when you and I get together on the air like this is we're always super honest, and you know. I've been very honest with you about a few things this year. I want to tell you a very big achievement that I'm very proud of. 1 year sober.
Go ahead, sir.
1 year sober.
Good for you. Good for you.
Thanks.
Congratulations, man. My friend. Seriously.
Thank you. I love you, brother.
No, and I have been following, and I've heard some other things that are good things that are happening to you. It couldn't happen to a better person, my friend. Seriously. And it goes right back.
Now, man.
I love you dearly. and listen, motherfucker, we miss you. We want you back on the goddamn Deviant Legion. You know, with a twist of lines, I don't care what the fuck you talk about. Just tell me that twist of lines on Deviant Legion.
We'll get me and Vicky together. We'll talk about something soon. We'll talk about Battlestar or something, okay?
Okay. Yeah, I talked to her today. By the way, it's her birthday on Saturday.
Happy birthday to Vicky.
Yeah, I'll tell her that. But you know what? Let's definitely get you back with Vicky because you two are a team. There's no fucking way you're not a team. I've told you that 100 times. You have to listen to me this time. God damn it.
I'll be back, brother. I'll be back. And I want to say
how much I've
enjoyed this.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the whole point, I think, to do these things and really enjoy ourselves and have a good time and be a family. And that's what you are, my friend. You're always part of this family of Deviant Legion, no matter what. All right.
Thanks, Carl. Thanks for having me back.
Well, absolutely. And listen, for everyone listening, okay, give them your ice cream information.
Why? Yeah, check me out on YouTube, the station. Please, I really need some viewers. Come and check out these interviews. Ice Creams, it's ISCREEMZ. That's my British accent for you. Ice Creams on YouTube. Peace out, people.
Okay, good night. And thank you very much for being with us. Thanks a lot, folks. Good night. Good night, Limes.
Good night, buddy. Take care.
All right, man. Bye.